Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Ben Scharf. Ben is the co-founder of Plattr. Plattr is a all-in-one turnkey solution for Shopify merchants that provides a ready-to-go theme as well as a suite of functionality built in as a single-click app that provides a super high converting, friction-free purchasing experience for customers. We had a fantastic conversation about how they are trying to revolutionize the merchant experience on Shopify. I think you're going to enjoy. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the podcast. It is my extreme pleasure to welcome Ben Scharf, who is the co-founder of Plattr, to the podcast. Welcome, Ben.
Jason, thanks for having me.
We were talking about off air about that. I'm pretty sure your background is the most impressive podcast recording background of any guest I've had on the podcast so far in over 300 episodes. I know you've got your own podcast, and that's why you've got this beautiful in-home setup for this.
Wow, that's a compliment. Yeah, I would say, I guess I'm cheating, but it's because we have a full studio in my living room. So I was like, why not utilize it for episodes I'm doing on other people's podcasts virtually as well?
It's amazing. It makes for a pretty amazing hosting experience when you've got a guest that is this well set up and they're not. Sometimes guests will be using like AirPods and then they'll die mid-show and then we'll have to take a break and they'll have to get like a microphone or whatever. So yeah, this is a good setup. This is a really good setup. And your podcast is called Turning Pro, isn't it?
Correct.
And you're based out of New York. So you're in the epicenter of all things commerce and content and live in Gary V land.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot happening around here. I think part of it is being able to sift through the noise because there is so much happening. But with that being said, it's definitely the land of opportunity in New York.
Yeah, I went from one relatively remote and quiet place to another relatively remote and quiet place. I was in New Zealand for almost 30 years, California boy, born and raised, but lived in New Zealand for almost 30 years. My wife's a Kiwi as well. And then we moved to Mexico March of last year. I've been touring around Mexico for the last year. And then we just arrived in Puebla, which is where we want to make a more long-term home base out of Puebla. So we've just arrived here. We've got ourselves all set up here in Puebla and we're loving it. But Puebla is only, the metro area is only about 3 million people. So by Mexican city standards, it's a pretty small city. And obviously by New York standards, it's a pretty small place as well.
Yeah, but in a remote world these days, I don't really think your location is definitely the only limiting factor in terms of what you can accomplish.
And that was the amazing thing. But I tell you, one of the big motivators of moving here from New Zealand was to be back in the North American e-commerce ecosystem and be able to attend events, attend conferences, be able to host different things. And yeah, definitely proximity, I think, to the sort of, like I would say, the nexus of commerce. I think being proximity does matter a little bit for sure for doing podcasts and things like that. And certainly work with my clients. I don't need to be on site with them anymore like I may perhaps used to be many years ago. But yeah, definitely I think proximity to the action is definitely, there are benefits to being within proximity of the action. And I'm sure that New York is a pretty inspirational place to be.
Definitely. I think being surrounded by people who are equally as motivated just pushes you to be better every single day. And I think the other amazing thing about it is that there's so much diversity in the city in terms of different pockets of people with different interests. And so it's very easy for you to course correct based on your own interests as you evolved as an individual to find people who are similar.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely love that. And I've seen that too. Definitely being able to, I guess, because now I'm on the move a lot more, feeling like I'm part of the digital nomad community more than I ever have been before. And because we have been traveling for over a year now, this is, yeah, definitely feeling like you're part of, I guess, a community of people. Certainly I've been a part of the e-commerce community for many years, but also as I've started to niche down more on B2B e-commerce and then also becoming a digital nomad, certainly there's those little niche communities that you can find yourself in that are pretty exciting. You can encourage each other. You can help each other. You can support each other. You can help grow each other's businesses and make referrals and all those sorts of things. So it's a pretty exciting space to be in. But we're not here to talk about me today. We're here to talk about you and the Plattr platform. And as I understand it, you know, I could be completely off base here. In full transparency, I've never used Plattr or worked with Plattr before. I'm coming at this with very fresh eyes. But as I understand it, it's a combination of theme and app-based functionality that makes it easier to stand up a turnkey Shopify store that is both going to be high converting, easy to manage. It's going to have a lot of those out of the box functionalities with it to where you don't have to go out and install. Because the reality is almost every single Shopify project that I have architected in my career has anywhere from 20 to 35 apps as part of that implementation. Even in a heavily customized store, you still leverage a ton of apps. And in some cases, you're then taking those base apps and you're customizing those even further from a front-end logic perspective. So Shopify, definitely, it's pretty rare, especially with a complex Shopify Plus build, it's pretty rare that you wouldn't be leveraging a whole ton of apps, and you feel sometimes like you're maybe getting nickel and dimed to death by those apps, and they all take a fee. Sometimes they all take a bit of a rev share. So there's a lot involved in that, but it feels you've tried to come up with, okay, if we were going to stand up our ideal Shopify store that using the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, what would we want to include in that store out of the box that will allow us to give us the best chance possible to have a high performing Shopify store that's going to work, drive revenue, drive conversion, drive stickiness. And it feels like you've bundled that all together into something that basically someone can come into your business. And it also feels a little bit like you're kind of half agency, half product platform, because you do onboard customers with a white glove process into the Platter platform. And so it feels like maybe you were scratching an itch a little bit. Maybe you were a standalone agency and you went, man, we feel like we're recreating these same things over and over again. Why don't we productize this, turn it into a bit of a platform that's more turnkey and run with it?
That was very, for someone who's never worked with the product or the platform, that was very well articulated in terms of what we're building with Platter. I would say our business is built around a couple core theses and why we are where we are today. The first one is that a lot of apps in the Shopify ecosystem are features, not products. And so what that does to brand owners, to the point that you were just alluding to around the number of apps you were using, is you end up with a lot more support teams, a lot more expenses, and a lot more of a bloated tech stack when managing your storefront than you should, which presents a whole host of issues that we can delve into here in a few minutes. The second piece to it that we realize when working with a handful of brands is that there's this misconception in the market that building a high converting storefront takes a long time and is really expensive. But the reason for that is because most parties who are delivering these storefronts to brands are disincentivized to make these processes a lot quicker, right? Like particularly agencies more broadly, a lot of them get paid for their time. So why would they want to build something that makes them spend less time to deliver the end product? And so for us, there's a couple different things that went into this. The first one was, can we natively build a lot of the functionality in the marketing and conversion category into one theme and one app bundle to minimize the number of apps are on your store, but also working to maintain the same level of quality at a fraction of the cost? Because with the economies of scale, you're getting the benefit from the product we've been building for a couple of years now. And then the second piece to that is recognizing that every store has a similar delivery in terms of the core tenets of what a store has, right? You have a homepage, you have a collection page, you have a product page. And with that, we can build a library of features and sections within those features to be able to then deliver storefronts a lot quicker than the average build, and also give you a better cost comparison to other alternatives while maintaining the same level of parity had you decided to go down the route of custom building something, downloading 40 apps, adding customizations to each piece of that. The way that I describe it to people is, I'm not going to mislead you and tell you that we're going to get you 100% of the way there out of the box. But if I can get you 75% of the way there and minimize the amount of custom code and the amount of incremental apps you need on top of our product, then it's a net win for you.
Yeah. And look, I think that you're not the only one to recognize the pitfalls of 100% custom Shopify builds every single time. Even from an agency perspective, I'm seeing a lot more agency partners, and it's not just Shopify. I mean, we're talking Shopify, BigCom, VTEX, pick your platform, really. We're seeing a lot more agencies come to market with what they term kind of accelerator products, which is a pre-built, customized theme, pre-installed suite of apps. Now, 9 times out of 10, those aren't necessarily completely custom-built functionalities in-house. Maybe they're taking a stack or a suite of apps that they know play nicely together from an app store, for example, but they're pre-installing those, they're pre-configuring those, they make sure that stack of apps play nice with each other, play nice with their custom theme, and then they go to market with that as almost like a productized build that they then can extend and enhance and customize over the long term as they move from the build phase into, say, the retainer phase with the agency, where then they're going to have sprints running each month where they're going to enhance and extend over time and add to that core suite of functionality. So I feel like what you guys have done is take that recognition that every single agency out there in the market is building their own version of an accelerator, and you're saying, why wouldn't we want to make that more broadly accessible, even to agencies? So even if other agencies wanted to not have to build and maintain their own accelerator in-house, they could take our accelerator product, be very transparent with the merchant that they're using the Platter platform. And then from there, they can move almost straight into, with very little heavy lift, they can move straight into a managed services engagement instead of a professional services engagement, whereby they can get them straight into that retainer, enhance, and extend process. And it cuts the time to value significantly in that environment, right?
100%. I think you bring up a really interesting point, because there's a handful of people where when they hear what our business does for the first time, they think that we're competitive with agencies. But I feel very different, because if you think about it, fundamentally, the problems that we solve for a brand, we're also solving for an agency. What are those? We're improving your operational efficiencies because we're requiring less custom code to get to a final product. You're benefiting from the economies of scale of all the functionality that were built into one solution. You're also getting the updates that we're releasing quarterly. So if I go to an agency and I say, hey, look, I don't care what you charge your end customer in the sense that that's your engagement with the customer. As long as we're making our piece on the back end, I think that you can reap the benefits of our product the same way that a brand does when we go direct. And I also recognize that there's no world where we're ever going to just touch every brand in the world. That's why agencies exist. So we want to partner with agencies. We want agencies to be empowered by working on our product. And so that's the beautiful part of our strategy as a business, is that we can go direct to brand and we can go to agencies. And so there's just a larger opportunity here for us.
And because I guess you're still using core Liquid functionality, using core theme components, you're building out the sections, you're building out all of what you're doing using what I would say is standard Shopify tooling without getting like crazy custom. It's not like you've built a headless front end for Shopify. That's not what you're doing. You're not trying to replace the Hexagon paradigm here. And you're not even trying to create a FE, like a front end as a service platform. That's not what you're trying to do. You're saying, look, Shopify has enough tooling in its toolkit around its theme engine that it gives us enough flexibility where we can write some of this custom logic in a way that is completely Shopify native. But instead of having to maybe put that selection of 20 to 30 apps in there, maybe over time you end up with 5 or 6 apps only. And maybe those apps are only apps that then allow you to integrate with other third-party platforms like Klaviyo, for example. And obviously the Klaviyo app is free because all you're doing is you're paying for the usage of the Klaviyo platform. But in terms of getting the base data out of your Shopify platform into Klaviyo to allow Klaviyo to do that heavy lifting of both transactional campaign management as well as regular marketing campaign management, maybe that's all you end up with in your Shopify store in terms of apps, is the free apps that then allow you to connect to third-party systems and technology that allow you to level up your Shopify game from there. So it feels, hey, we're effectively creating an additional tool set sitting on top of base Shopify that allows you to get from A, maybe not A to Z, but maybe we get you from A to G or A to whatever in a much more abbreviated fashion. That means we don't start out with a whole bunch of tech debt from day one.
And so I think you make a couple good points there. The first one is that you can integrate any other third-party Shopify app on top of our theme the way that you can with any other theme. And so there is something to be said about like a specific functionality that we offer in our theme. Maybe there's a third-party app that you want to use instead for whatever the reason might be, and there's nothing wrong with that. What we're saying is that it's very hard for you to get parity out of the box with what we can offer you for a price that's even remotely comparable to what ours is. And that's because of the economies of scale that we have from building this product for the last couple of years. The second thing I'll say to that, where I think this is one of the unique aspects of our business, is that we're a theme and app bundle. And to another point that you made, we're very cognizant of the fact that there's limitations in terms of the Shopify theme editor capabilities. And we've definitely pushed the boundaries as much as we could in a lot of different areas. But what we realized with that is there's certain functionality that we've wanted to build that we have been building that's a lot more sophisticated than what's possible within the theme layer, which is why we've now built an app that works in conjunction with the theme. And so the way that we think about it when we package it up to brands that we're working with, you can buy the app without the theme, but you can't have the theme without the app. Because we recognize that long term, the sophistication of the app product is really where like the stickiness is long term when we're thinking 2, 3, 5 years down the line. But nonetheless, like, we don't really want to just have people using the theme right now that aren't interested in the app, because we see the app functionality as the real big drivers and the ones that we've gone much deeper on from like a tech perspective and how robust those features are.
And it feels, if I understand correctly, the way you've done this is that so with your accelerator platform, do you still have to install your apps that come as a bundle with this as single-click applications that actually get plugged into the standard Shopify app framework? Or are these pieces of functionality all built out as native components or native, say, for example, React components or whatever functionality that you've built out as apps that is over and above the default functionality of core Shopify? Does the merchant still have to install your apps as single-click apps, or are they all built out to be delivered via your theme?
We have one theme and one app. I think it's important to make the distinction that we don't have multiple apps. What we have is the functionality of multiple apps built into one super app. So if you want to just have the theme products, there's a lot of functionality built into that. But there's certain features and functionality that are much deeper and much more robust that are in the app. And there's even things we tried to build into the theme layer where we just could only get it so far that we ended up doing it into the app. A great example for you with that is bundling. We had a V1 bundle builder inside of the theme, but there was just a lot of limitations in terms of how much we can really push the limits there. So we built a mix and match bundling feature into the app products that has incentive thresholds, a lot of gamification features that we couldn't build into the theme version of it. So at this point now, any feature where there's a slight risk of not being able to go as deep as we would like, we put it into the app instead of the theme. But to answer your main question, you need to download our app, singular app, the same way you would other Shopify apps on top of the theme, like any other traditional apps. The thing that I'll say in the current state, our theme is unlisted and our app is also unlisted today. There's a world where the app will be listed as a standalone in the next couple of weeks. I don't think we're planning to list the theme on the marketplace anytime soon. But I think one of the things we realize with the app is that there are a lot of merchants out there who maybe aren't ready to switch their theme product, but still want to take advantage of the functionality we have in the app. And so I think we're leaving some dollars on the table by not letting them use the app functionality. Maybe down the line, they'll decide they want to move to the theme product as well. But I think that also just widens our surface area in terms of the number of brands we could work with on day one.
And how the heck did you come up with this idea? How did you even get involved in this space? As I look out across the history kind of the verticals and the areas you've worked in, I wouldn't immediately think, oh, this guy's going to build an amazing Shopify accelerator platform. I wouldn't think that. You've built apps like standalone mobile apps before with 6 Foot Closer. You've worked with Gopuff, you've been an angel investor, obviously you've been a podcast host, but there isn't anything other than that that would allude to me going, this guy just gets it and he sees the gaps. He understands the challenges that Shopify merchants are facing and he's going to go build something to fix this problem once and for all kind of thing. So how the heck did you even get into this space?
It's a really good question, and I'm actually really glad you asked that, because candidly, I've been on a handful of podcasts and no one has drawn the incentive. I don't understand, like, the 2 + 2 does not equal 4 in this situation. The thing that you don't know and that you can't see from the outside is that I actually spent 8 months at Gopuff building out a business unit that was called Powered By. Are you familiar with what the Gopuff business model is?
No, not entirely. No, only from what I've heard through the media. That's
so
it.
To give you quick context, just to frame my response to your question, Gopuff is essentially instant delivery for convenience store goods. So the way that Uber Eats would work for like delivery of restaurant meals, Gopuff would fulfill orders of candy and drinks and snacks. The one thing to note there is that Gopuff is vertically integrated. So Uber Eats is what we call a 3P. Gopuff is a 1P, where they own their own fulfillment centers, their own inventory, their own drivers. So they had a better margin profile. But the reason that's interesting is they owned all their own inventory. So how that relates to what I ended up spending my time on was I was building out a business unit there called Powered By, which was essentially unlocking instant delivery for .com websites. And so the way that would work is, let's say you went to liquiddeath.com to buy a case of water. If the SKUs in the basket were in the fulfillment center that was geofenced within the delivery address of the end customer, we would surface GoPuff as an instant delivery option. So it was revolutionary because we were bringing instant delivery to .com, which had never been done before, right? So those 8 months, all I did was talk to Shopify brands and talk to people in the D2C world and understand what it took to build a Shopify app in the space. And while doing so, all I could think to myself, there are so many issues in this space that need to be solved, a lot of friction points. And so I spent a lot of time working on that. And eventually I got to the point where I was like, you know what? It's time to go build the solution, because I'm talking to some of the largest household names that we all know within the D2C world that are dealing with a lot of these same issues. And that's ultimately how I ended up making the jump into this. I will say that it wasn't on day one I got to the insight of what Plaider looks like today. Something a lot of people don't know, and I actually made a post about this a few weeks ago, was that Plaider is the fourth iteration of what the business used to be, which started as a consulting practice into an agency, into a theme product, into what is now Plaider. I can confidently say that Plaider is the final destination in terms of what this business becomes from like a naming perspective and a mission perspective. But I think it's important to understand, because a lot of people don't realize this, is that the insight we landed on today was actually just a function of hours and hours of work and R&D with other people to just start to draw these conclusions, make small iterations, and land where we are today on what is now known to be Plaider.
And is it your vision? Because I know that on your website, you talk about the white glove onboarding service that as of today, you guys are doing the implementations of Plaider on your customers' behalf. But of course, it tends to be significantly faster time to market, shorter time to market than your typical custom ground up agency build. Is it your vision ultimately to make this effectively a partner-only product where you guys focus 100% on the product side and then you have implementation partners, maybe agencies, whatever, that take over the actual white glove onboarding of clients into the platform? But I understand, obviously, when you're new, you got to seed the market with your product, right? And almost every single SaaS platform, SaaS technology, SaaS product out there started out as both they were not only developing product, but they were also doing professional and managed services to get their product into market in the first place and kind of prove the use cases as proof of concepts. And it feels like maybe that's the direction you guys will ultimately head is, hey, look, we ultimately just want to be a product company. We want to focus 100% on building the best platform on top of Shopify we can. But in order for everybody to find out what this product can do and to make sure it gets installed properly, configured properly, and is performing well for customers, we need to do the first, I don't know, maybe it's 100 implementations that we need to do before the market is seeded enough with the platform that now we can go to a partner first model. So what's your vision around ultimately where you'd like to land from a product versus professional services perspective?
Look, I think you nailed it. The goal is definitely to evolve into the product first perspective that you alluded to. The thing that I will say is I don't know if the day comes where we ever 100% eliminate that piece of our own business. And the reason for that is the insights we get from working directly with the customers has framed everything we've done from a product perspective. My technical co-founder is so amazing at taking in customer feedback and guiding our product roadmap based on that. And so while I can tell you from the perspective of scalability, we absolutely want to get to a point where the product is at a place where agencies and freelancers can take it and implement it. But we know, to your point, that we can't skip the first couple steps to get there, right? The first one is, do we have the right components of the product built in? Do we have the documentation and the tutorials to be able to back up what an agency might need to go A to Z in an implementation without feeling like they stood on a, you know, they got to a place where they just didn't know what was next because there was a gap in information? And the third piece of it is that we're product people, that we knew from day one, we want to build a software company, we want to build a product company. But we recognize that by nature of how we went about building this, in the sense that we didn't go down the venture rabbit hole. We've raised less than $1 million to date, and we're on track to be profitable this month. So we're very cost conscious in terms of how we allocate our dollars. We realize that we have to put in the time and effort today from really understanding our customers to shape the product to then get to the day where we can start to just be the platform that people are using to service their customers.
Makes complete sense. And did you, when you were thinking about, okay, what does this look like? What does the architecture look like? How are we going to build this thing? Are we going to build this as a standalone platform product? Are we going to, how much of the core underlying Shopify platform are we going to leverage versus build custom, you know, how much of this is going to be offloaded into an app that then can be hosted by us, and we can have almost unlimited capability to deliver additional functionality to the front end via our app, because then, you know, we're unshackled from just using front end logic. We now can use effectively back end logic surfaced via API to the front end. And were you looking out there at some of the, there's quite a few Magento accelerators out there now. There's quite a few WordPress / WooCommerce accelerators out there. And some of those are starting to become more famous or more well-known than the underlying platform in some respects, because it helps people get to market faster on those platforms. And so it obfuscates away some of the challenges of getting up and running quickly on those platforms. And were you using that almost as a bit of a model for you guys going, hey, we've seen this done really well in other, on top of other platforms, and we want to use that as a framework that we're going to build against that same type of model? Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
It's an interesting question, but to be honest with you, the real answer is that we actually didn't use anything outside of the Shopify ecosystem as a frame of reference in terms of accelerators on Magento or Woo or any of these other platforms. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first one is that we knew that we wanted to focus on Shopify out of the gate on day one as a company. And from a lot of the research we did, we realized that the landscape is so different respective to the platform in terms of the tools that are available, how people are using those tools. And so I think in a lot of ways, we recognize that if we wanted to go take the core principles of a Magento product to build on Shopify, there's going to be a lot of things that are different. I would say it holds true to the same fundamentals around the consolidation and the streamline of the product to get to where you want to go faster. But I would say that our basis for doing it wasn't referencing other platforms, but rather recognizing the same recurring issues of the merchants we had been talking to within the Shopify ecosystem. And we recognize that the same progressions happen every single time, right? It's either you take a basic theme out of the box, you go onto the app store, you download a bunch of apps. And if you need a little bit more than that, maybe you add in some customization, or you go to an agency on day one, you build something completely custom. If you're not technical, you're effectively beholden to that agency every time you want to make a change because you don't understand how to read code to make those changes. Or the third piece of it is you go down a random rabbit hole, you spend a lot of money because you don't actually know what you're doing. You recognize too late down the path that you made a really big mistake, and now you have PTSD from spending six figures on a website that doesn't perform at parity for how much it costed you. And so now what you're doing is you're scared to rip the Band-Aid off and start over. And so now you're just adding more customizations and more apps onto an underlying infrastructure that has issues as is. And so when we realized these were all the different options, in my mind, I'm like, why can't we just get you to 70% of the way there faster and cheaper? And then once you get to 70%, now you can make the decision of, do I want to add a little bit of custom code? Do I want to add a couple apps? Do I want to go to a freelancer? Do I want to hire an in-house developer? Whatever it looks like, there's a lot of different options. I think the problem is that a lot of people don't know where to start or how to start. And so they have trouble getting 70% of the way there with a clean infrastructure that has a lot of the core functionality. And for us, the way that we define core functionality, does it directly attribute to your conversion rate or your average order value in terms of making you more money? Or the last piece of it is saving you more money by improving your operational efficiencies. We're very honest about the categories that we're not going to touch, right? Subscriptions, payments, reviews, email, SMS. Like, we know the categories where we're always going to refer you out to another player. But within a lot of the low fidelity functionality out of the box, we recognize that could just be baked into one solution to get you there faster and helping you to not make all those mistakes before getting there.
Makes complete sense. I think at last count, Shopify App Store had over 8,000 apps in there. And yes, there is some duplication in terms of the types of apps that are in there, but it's a lot for a new merchant to choose from, right? And sure, there's quite a few blog articles out there, et cetera, around, okay, if you're a new startup, here's a suite of 10, 15 apps that'll probably get you a good chunk of the way there. But to your point, installing them, testing them, trying them, do they work? Do they not? And then if I uninstall them, is there cruft code left behind? that it's going to slow down my theme. It's going to slow down my store front end. Even I've built and helped run agencies. And the last one I worked with, we were a Shopify Plus agency. And when we would go into a new build for a reasonably complex project, sometimes it would be my job as a senior solution architect to test out potential apps so that we could compare and we could say, okay, the app either does 100% of the functionality we need or it doesn't. If it doesn't, maybe it does 50, 60, 70, 80% of the functionality. So now instead of having to build 100% of this functionality from scratch, we're going to get us you 80% of the way there with an app, and then we're going to customize on top of this. And this is going to be part of the overall solution architecture. And so I know I've tested hundreds and hundreds of Shopify apps over time, and it's very time consuming. It's very difficult. You got to install the app. You got to configure it. You got to load, make sure that your products and product data are loaded into it correctly. You got to make sure that it's playing nice with the rest of the front end functionality and any other apps that you may have installed at the time. It is a very time-consuming process, even for someone who's a senior solution architect and is very experienced on the platforms that he's architecting on. And I can only imagine that if you try to move that level of effort onto a relatively green customer who's not that familiar with Shopify, they're in the startup phase, they don't necessarily have any revenue, it's pre-revenue at this stage, and all of a sudden we're thinking, geez, are we expecting this person to go and do that? Are they going to try and hire a freelancer off Fiverr to help them with this? Are they going to try to hire an agency, even pre-revenue? Probably not, because any agency that's going to be building on Shopify, any qualified good agency, they're not going to be that cheap. You don't want to pick the cheapest agency out there because, you know, you get what you pay for usually in the agency world. So it feels like this short circuits that process for those beginning customers. Although I realize for you guys, you're not necessarily targeting this just at startups, but what it does is it removes a tremendous amount of heavy lifting off of the customer to make sure that they're going to have a harmonized stack that's going to perform well out of the box, whether it be startup or even just early phase of their business. And maybe they've come off Wix, or maybe they've come off Weebly, or they've come off of Squarespace, or they've come off of WooCommerce or something like that. And they're really ready to step it up to a Shopify play that then has an extensive pre-integrated ecosystem where they can integrate within WMS players, 3PLs, they can integrate into ERPs, they integrate into all these other back office systems to make themselves more efficient because of the depth and breadth of the Shopify ecosystem, but they still have to do a base build to get them there, right? And it feels like you're trying to plug as many of these gaps for customers without them needing to do the heavy lifting of installing 50 apps and testing them.
So I've 3 points to make in response to that. I think the first one is one of the things we learned early on is there's a misconception in terms of the revenue that a brand does and the assumption around the person in charge of that brand having it figured out all because their brand does more revenue, which is not necessarily the case. I think that we realized one of the value points that a lot of people see in us is almost like an R&D arm or like an e-com arm for their business, because information overload and analysis paralysis is very real in the Shopify ecosystem. Oftentimes, brands use an app or they use a certain agency because their friend told them to, not necessarily because it was the source of truth. But when you see these updates come out that are hundreds of pages and everyone has an opinion about what the right stack is, and you only have so many hours in your day, you don't know who you should trust. You don't know what to use. You don't know how to use. So I think there's a peace of mind element there where our pitch to you in some regard is, look, we're not brand builders, we're e-com nerds. We'll be able to tell you what functionality you should be thinking about using before you even maybe knew it existed. I'm not going to tell you the best things to do for your brand, but I can tell you, here's why you should put upsells in your card drawer. Here's why you should use a sticky CTA as a brand that has a lot of SKUs and a low price point, because we know it to be true that this will help increase your AOV or your conversion rate. So we have our methodology around why you should use certain functionality based on what brand you are. And because of that, brands see this peace of mind where they can stick to being brand builders and they can lean on us as that R&D arm to tell them what to use while also leveraging our technology and our other experience to build their new storefront. And the last thing I'll say is that majority of the brands we're doing work with are at a minimum typically $5 million or more in revenue on Shopify. And so I think while we do have some brands that are on the lower end of that tier, oftentimes it's brands who are like, all right, our business is real. We're doing real revenue. I'm recognizing that we need to make some improvements somewhere to see some substantial improvements across some of the core metrics that we're tracking. And this is a solution that they seem to see as value in order to get to where they're trying to go.
And how do you guys think about B2B on Shopify? Now, B2B on Shopify is for Shopify Plus anyway. I think Shopify was extremely late to the B2B commerce game. They would admit that themselves. They've stated it themselves. They were very late to the B2B commerce game. They have tried to remedy that very quickly. Anecdotally, we're hearing stories about hundreds of millions of dollars being spent over the last 12 to 18 months to add additional B2B functionality to the platform. They're making up ground very quickly because of that recognition that the growth opportunity for B2B commerce is massive over the next decade. And they saw that there was a lot of B2B brands that wanted to go onto Shopify during COVID because that's Shopify's name brand for e-commerce that they know well from a platform perspective. And yet those B2B brands didn't really have the functionality they needed on Shopify. So Shopify is trying to close that gap as quick as they can versus rival platforms that got the jump on them. So how are you guys starting to think about Plattr for B2B? Because this feels like another incredible opportunity for you guys to start. I know it's not necessarily your bread and butter. You don't necessarily have the feedback coming in, the feedback loop coming in from B2B brands like you do from D2C and B2C brands. But is this something that you guys are looking at all in terms of an opportunity?
It's a really good question. We actually have a couple B2B businesses that use our product. The thing that I would say is fundamentally what we're trying to do is just optimize the conversion funnel for anyone who's buying a product. So if your end customer is buying something from you online, we believe that our product can help reduce the friction in that process. With that being said, would I say that we've leaned into messaging and positioning around B2B or course corrected some part of our acquisition strategy towards B2B? Not particularly today. I think part of that is a function of recognizing we have so much room to grow from a market opportunity within the B2C world. And when you are limited in terms of resources and where you're allocating your time, you can only do so many things at once. That's not to say that, like I said, we haven't had some organic inbound from B2B, but for the short term to medium term, I would say that the B2C is still our main focus.
Makes complete sense. With several million Shopify stores out there in the world and plenty more to come, obviously it's a big table to feast on, that's for sure. No question about it. And how do you guys make your money as a platform? Are you treating it almost like a SaaS platform with a subscription? Are you treating it more like a professional services engagement? How do you think about your platform in terms of your go-to-market and how you make your money?
So we have two different components to our pricing model. For the brands that were doing the implementation onto the theme product who are going to take the theme and the app, there's a one-time upfront implementation fee. Within that, we're building full CRO optimized designs and doing the implementation for you. And then you have a subscription on the back end that gives you access to the theme and the app. And then I guess the last piece is we do have an ad hoc rate. So we have some brands who will put in random custom requests periodically where we'll service those for you if you'd like us to. We have a couple brands on retainer. I'm a huge proponent of maintaining the services in-house because it's a really good R&D ground. We recognize that it's not infinitely scalable, nor do we want it to be, but to have some of our champion clients on retainer utilizing that piece of the business is very valuable. But fundamentally, we have the implementation and the subscription if you're using the theme and the app. And then once the app goes self-serve in the next couple of weeks, there'll just be a traditional SaaS model with the app.
Right. And then you'll maybe have a gold, silver, bronze kind of tier kind of situation, or is it just going to be like a flat fixed fee per month for your app?
Right now, it's a flat fixed fee per month for the app. I would say that we want to figure out how to optimize pricing going forward. So I think there's a lot of different ways we can slice and dice it based on utilization of functionality and different ways to use analytics to show the value we're giving you. So using that as a function of the pricing. But in the current state, it's just a monthly subscription.
Makes sense. And when you look out over the next, say, 12 to 18 months of building out the Plattr product, is there functionality that you already know, hey, look, our platform does not do this today, but we know it needs to, or we know we want it to. We're going to be building that over the next year or so. Or do you have some existing sort of feature requests in the pipeline that you're prioritizing above the others? What does the growth in functionality of the platform look like over, say, the next year?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I think that we spent the first long time getting a lot of that core functionality out of the way that we needed in order to be able to show that value on day one. But a couple of things that are going to be rolled out over the next couple of months, I'm super excited about. First one is checkout extensions. We have a lot of checkout extensibility that we're working with in terms of components that can be integrated into your checkout. That's something that our product team has been working on for a long time. The second one is our rules engine, which I'm super excited about. The ability to be able to go on your store and say, anyone with Jason and his email when checking out gets 10% discount, things like that. So the rules engine, I'm really excited about. The next piece, which we don't have yet, in terms of it being as robust as I would like is an analytics layer to be able to show direct attribution to each of the features within the app. Because by having that, we'll be able to say to you, hey, you were using the mix and match bundling feature on our product. We saw that you did $100,000 in revenue last month just from this feature alone. So I think to be able to have that for attribution is really important. And then we also have some post-purchase stuff in the pipeline. So I think to have the pre-purchase upsells, the shoppable videos, the mix and match bundling, the checkout extensions, the rules engine, the analytics, and the post-purchase, for that to be the main focus over the next, call it 6 to 12 months, to go in tandem with our theme product, I'm really excited about relative to the team that we have, right? We're not the biggest organization, but man, does this product and engineering team just like to ship products? I was always going to say,
very aggressive.
And then you can go back and make improvements.
Yeah, look, I was going to say it's a very ambitious pipeline of development coming into play. And how does AI factor into how you build, what you build, making it effectively no code, low code for the customer who wants to implement this technology alongside you? How has AI accelerated your ability to deliver software? How are you weaving potentially AI into your software? Because where I see us today is I see us at literally not even the first inning of AI and software. Like we hear a lot about it, but the fact that I can't talk to Xero, for example, as my accountancy package and say, okay, go here, reconcile this. Yes, this connects with this transaction, or I want to reconfigure Xero to do this. The fact that I can't have a conversation with my software to configure it yet is just mind-blowing, because I think AI is absolutely there, but software developers have been really late to the party to bring touchless configuration. Every single piece of software I interact with on a daily basis, I still got to use my laptop. I still got to use a cursor. I still got to use the keyboard. I still have to use all the traditional inputs, and I still have to use the exact same interfaces that I've always worked with for the last 30 years. And it feels like for all the bluster of AI and large language models, it feels like we haven't really progressed beyond that from a user and configuration experience perspective. And I feel like that's a lost opportunity at this point. Sure, large language models can help, but how do you guys think about how AI not only improves process and makes it more efficient with the use of, say, copilots, for example, versus trying to leverage AI to make your customers and their customers' experience better?
So I'll say this. We have an internal resource who's been working full-time on just the AI component in terms of researching and understanding where it can be applied, how it can be applied. The thing I'll say is that our team has been very good at not getting distracted by the shiny object. And by no means am I saying AI is a shiny object, but you see a lot of these people who were first building a Web3 company, then it was NFTs, and then they woke up and now it was an AI company. And so it's important that we don't just put the cart before the horse and jump because someone said the buzzword. We're being very intentional about if and when we're going to use it. Is it meaningful? Where are we doing it? And why are we doing it? And so I'll say this. We haven't integrated it into our current products yet in any very meaningful way, but we have had resources spending their full time figuring out where and how we're going to do it, because I think you're naive to think that's not where the world is going. And the last thing you want is to be building a business that can get commoditized overnight by AI. And so to me, the most important thing at the end of the day is understanding and trusting that my product and engineering team recognizes that risk is on the table. And so how do you safeguard against that in terms of where you're going with your product, with what you're building and how you're building it?
Yeah. And to your point, I think Shopify, obviously with their copilot for admins, for store admins, and with the other noises they're making around how they can integrate certain functionality into admins, where basically a store owner can say, hey, Shopify, do this. Shopify, identify these customers, create this segment, present to them this information. I think Shopify is on the path of that. But to your point, I think it sounds easy. A lot of things in our industry sound easy if you say them fast, but to actually build them in a seamless way that doesn't seem haphazard and piecemeal, but to have it well thought out and well integrated into the product experience, not only for the admin, but for the end consumer of the platform and the technology, that's the hard part, right? And the industry is moving so fast. I'm working with some AI developers right now. They're straight out of university. They're like a year out of university. They want to play in the AI space. But almost everything that we come up with together, and they like to work with me because I've got a large corpus of data and information and content, and they want to ideally try to start building something for the creator space. And what we're finding is that kind of almost everything we come up with that can help ease the process of content production, post-production, distribution, usage, uptake, conversion, etc. We'll start talking about something and then 2 weeks later, a new piece of software will be released as a SaaS platform to do those things. And so to your point, I think there's so much time, energy, money, resources going into AI right now. I don't think it's 100% clear which pieces of functionality are going to be provided by a platform like ChatGPT or OpenAI versus the apps that are going to be built on top of that. It feels like the old days of when smartphones became the norm and when Apple started to take over and then Android came along. We didn't really know, okay, what are the platforms going to provide? What are the phones themselves going to provide? What are the native apps going to provide on the phone versus what are the apps that are going to break out on the app stores, right? The iOS app store, obviously, and then later the Android app store or Google Play. What are they going to provide versus what are the gaps that we can build against and really build a business around? And in your world, it feels like there's two pieces here that you guys have to consider in tandem. What is Shopify going to own? What are they going to deliver? What are they going to add to their core platform that we don't need to? And then secondarily, what are platforms like OpenAI and ChatGPT going to offer on their own platforms that we don't need to build on top of? Or to the next step, what can we build on top of these platforms that are going to be great for our customers but are not going to become commoditized? So it's a hard decision to make, right?
The last word you just said is the main word in all of this, in my opinion, which is understanding what is commodity and what is not and what will be commoditized. I think there were so many people who were early into AI who went down a rabbit hole of building a business that they didn't really have the foresight to understand that they were just building something that could be commoditized, duplicated, and ruined overnight. And that to me is the biggest question you need to ask yourself when you're delving into the world of AI is, are you just building something that can be commoditized very easily? Are you building something that has defensibility and longevity because of that?
Absolutely. Hit the nail on the head. Now, as we come to the end of our time together, I really appreciate your time today, Ben. You've been a pleasure to talk to. I could tell you run a podcast because, man, you were well-spoken, your content. You know how to deliver it. You know your mind. You know your business. Man, very well done. Now, I always like, at this point of the podcast, I always like to flip the script, turn the microphone over to my guest, let them ask me one question, any question they like. It could be personal or professional. So Ben Scharf from Plattr, what is your question for me today?
If you think Plattr fails, why would that be?
If Plattr was going to fail, again, I think that the biggest challenge will be to have enough foresight to realize what Shopify is going to deliver out of the box versus what you guys need to deliver. That's probably it.
Awesome.
Always
looking for the research.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard because a lot of app vendors have been put out of business by Shopify over the years. Just the reality as they bring new stuff into their platform.
Totally.
So it's tough. Listen, now, how should people get a hold of you if they want to learn more about Plattr? I'll put your link to your LinkedIn profile as well as to the Plattr website down in the show notes. But if people want to contact you and talk with you more about Plattr, what's the best way to do that?
They can contact me via email at ben@plattr.co. That's ben@plattr.co. You can also find me on Twitter at Ben Scharf, BenSharf. Same thing on LinkedIn.
Amazing.
And then our website is plattr.co as well.
Amazing. Amazing. Ben, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. You've been a joy to speak with. Wish you every success with Plattr. Definitely plenty of Shopify merchants out there that need a helping hand to level up their game out of the gate. So congratulations on getting to where you are with Plattr today. And I wish you every success. I look forward to speaking to you again soon as well.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It was a pleasure.
Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.